Ken Forrester, Executive Director at Momenta. Welcome to our Digital Thread podcast, produced by, for, and about digital industry leaders. In this series of conversations, we capture insights from the best and brightest minds in digital industry. They're executives, entrepreneurs, advisors, and other thought leaders. What they have in common is, like our team at Momenta, they are deep industry operators. We hope you find these podcasts informative. And as always, we welcome your comments and suggestions. Good day and welcome to episode 216 of our Momenta Digital Thread podcast series. Today, I'm greatly pleased to host Sumeet Sanyal, co-founder and CEO, Minds AI, a startup using artificial intelligence to optimize some of the most important industries on the planet. Minds AI is Momenta's most recent investment as well. Sumeet is an experienced chief executive officer with a demonstrated history of success in the computer software industry. He has a proven track record in designing enterprise software, machine learning, embedded software, systems on a chip, and high-performance computing, all backed by a strong entrepreneurial skill set. Sumeet is also a graduate of Indian Institute of Technology in Kanpur. Sumeet, welcome to our Digital Thread podcast today.
Hey, good morning, Ken, and thanks for having me, and both for the trust that Momenta has placed in Mind's Eye with your investment, and of course, for having me on your podcast. I'm really looking forward to our conversation.
As well, and I think as I was hinting in our pre-conversation, you've come highly recommended both as a speaker and as a very compelling entrepreneur. And of course, we've already invested behind the knowing that you can operate and scale a company, which we're quite excited about as well. So, you know, we call this the Digital Thread podcast. And so we always ask the question up front, what would you consider to be your digital thread? In other words, the one or more thematic threads that define your digital industry journey.
Indeed. And I really love the theme of this podcast, you know, digital threads. And for myself also, I'm always very curious to know the stories behind the founders of some of these very successful startups and the stories that we hear. So I'm really glad you're doing this. I've listened to a few on the series, and it's quite an interesting theme. So about myself, yeah, it's quite simple, actually. I've had a passion, almost bordering on an obsession, since I put my kind of first PC together when I was quite young. That's what made computers work, right? And I really wanted to understand that. And I remember as a kid, kind of taking apart the motherboard of the PC and looking at the black rectangular piece of plastic, hard plastic inside, and staring at it and thinking that what is the magic that goes inside this? So it's been a journey. So that motivated me to take electrical engineering as my engineering degree. So the choice was between, do you want to learn how to program computers or build computers? And all along, I've taken the choice of, you know, I want to learn how to build computers. And that led me towards electrical engineering degree. And in terms of the macroeconomic trends, macro big picture trends, that if I look back at my career, the first one was, of course, the telecom revolution. So after I graduated and when I came to this country from India, the telecom revolution was very much in swing. So I ended up designing kind of custom hardware for various telecom parts and base stations, et cetera, et cetera. It was the telecom journey. The next revolution was what I call the smartphone revolution. That was the big trend. And I was also front and center designing various parts for the smartphone revolution. One of the highlights of my career, if I look back, is designing the Bluetooth and Wi-Fi chips, which was a Broadcom part. I was at Broadcom at that time, the architect for these chips. And we were selling it to Apple, which was, of course, going into the very first iPhones. So wanted to know how computers work, getting into the innards of it, rather than going towards general purpose computing because of the kind of the global trends. I went into kind of SoC design, you know, application specific computing. And of course, the next revolution that I got hit by was the AI revolution. And at that point, I went from the design of these computing devices to the manufacturing of these computing devices, which brings us to the story of Mind's Eye.
It's interesting. First of all, just a comment on your story up front around digital thread. You know, VCs invest in people first and foremost, people who have ideas, defensible ideas, profitable ideas, et cetera, but it's people at the center, right? So I fully agree with you. I think sometimes the stories about the people and what made them successful is as interesting as, you know, effectively what they've accomplished. And so that was, in essence, the origin story for the podcast. Now, with regard to your being in the right place at the right time and truly working across, if you will, the ecosystem, I think it's pretty interesting. I was intrigued. So you've done enterprise software design, system on a chip, digital signal processing, wireless audio applications. And of course, then now you're running an AI company. So I have to ask, to what do you attribute this engineering dexterity?
Curiosity, right? Curiosity. And to me, I'm always I'm always learning, right? If I'm not learning at my current job, then I don't want to be doing it. I get bored. So it's just an insatiable thirst to keep learning, right? And as I said, kind of the big picture trajectory is indeed first the telecom revolution. That's where I was doing base station software, enterprise software. So whatever it takes to solve the problem, right? And for the telecom part of my career, it was mostly on heavy iron kind of data center, enterprise level solutions, which was kind of behind the base station, the off the cellular network. But then over the course of my career, I graduated more and more towards the peripherals of the network, which is graduated towards the handhelds. And so I did a bunch of hardware design and systems design for the mobile devices, because that was the complete craze. And see, the other part of it is I'm surfing the wave, right? I'm humble enough to know that I'm just a part of this bigger kind of transition that's happening, technology revolution that's happening. And I really feel like I surfed the wave of the telecom wave, and by nature, like to be on the bleeding edge of those waves, right? So there was the telecom revolution, then there was the smartphone revolution. And I guess I've been fortunate enough to identify these trends early now and jump onto them.
I noted your last engineering role prior to Minds AI described your work as designing a better system on a chip to do audio signal processing with deep neural nets. I have to ask, was this the beginning of your journey with AI and thus Minds AI?
Indeed it was, Ken. Indeed. And there is quite a story there. So I was the systems architect, and we were building a chip which was designed to do speech recognition, echo cancellation, noise reduction, etc. Very low power and very low latency applications, which was, you know, the need of the hour for the cell phones. And at that time, the state of the art in terms of speech recognition was stuck at about 80% recognition accuracies. Just to give a context, the average human being is about 99.5% accurate, in the sense that if you and I are talking, maybe every 200th word I will miss, but in a clear enough channel, 99.5% is human recognition accuracy for an average language speaker. And the machines were stuck at 80%, which was pathetic. And it had been stuck for decades. And at Broadcom and at Intel and companies like this, I've been fortunate enough to work with some of the world's leading experts on speech recognition, echo cancellation, using conventional signal processing means like FFT and filter design and stuff like this. And all of that accumulated knowledge and the state of the art worldwide was stuck at 80%. Over 30 years, they had managed to eke it up. Every year, maybe it would go up by a 0.5% or 1%. And my job was to implement these state-of-the-art algorithms in silicon so that we could sell it to the smartphone vendors. And I read this paper at that time from two kids at Google. And I really mean kids in the sense both that they were young and also that they had no prior background in signal processing. And with 3 months of work for a particular conference, they were able to move the state-of-the-art from 80% to 85%. And that was a very basic, straightforward application of neural nets. So I read this paper and I see the writing on the wall. that, oh my God, this is going to change everything. So I walked into my CEO's office and I told him, we need to pivot, and we need to pivot hard, and we need to put these neural processing chips into our smartphones, right? My CEO said, I have no idea. And I quit right there in the CEO's office, and I walked out. And the very next day, I filed to start my own, you know, deep learning company. It's another example of being way too ahead of our times, because it's finally today, right? Gosh, 10 years later, that custom neural network processing software is going into the smartphones. And of course, the latest Pixel phone, Google is starting its phones, that it's got a neural network processing chip in there, et cetera, et cetera. That's what I had pitched back to my CEO back then. And I saw the writing on the wall. And we saw this happen, the AI revolution. One field after another, first it was speech, then it was image recognition. Of course, the image recognition story is legendary. And neural networks just devastated records in one field after the other. And I saw that coming and have been surfing that wave since, you know.
So tell us about the origin story for Minds AI, which you founded in 2014.
Indeed. So we talked about the trigger event, which was a paper for speech recognition, right, using deep neural nets. And I saw the potential for these neural networks to revolutionize pretty much both the fields that at that point I considered myself an expert in. One was kind of telecom and building telecom hardware, and the other was signal processing, right? And that was the motivation to start the company. And it was a very sharp focus on deep neural nets, right? Because machine learning and AI are terms which are often abused and way overloaded, and they have ambiguous meanings. So I like to focus on deep learning, which specifically refers to this class of algorithms, which is a neural network and stacked deep layers of neural networks, which does all its magic. So that was indeed the genesis of the company. And then I looked around, so I myself did not have any prior expertise in deep learning. So I looked around and I was able to contact Simon Thielman, who was at that point just finishing his PhD under Geoffrey Hinton in Geoffrey Hinton's lab in Toronto. And Simon was looking for something to do. I went and pitched my startup idea to him and managed to get him excited. And that was it. Simon and I, we co-founded the company, right? Essentially, at that point, we were building bespoke neural network solutions for enterprise.
So your key product, Maestro, applies supervised learning, reinforcement learning, and generative AI to key pain points in the semiconductor industry. So what have been some of your notable use cases and wins there?
Yes. So semiconductor industry is one of the most complex manufacturing environments on the planet. And to give you kind of a scale of things, a typical factory, the capital cost to build out and fill out a typical semiconductor manufacturing factory, which are in the jargon, they are called fabs, is $20 billion. And these are one of the most sophisticated and complex manufacturing environments on the planet. It sounds like a boring topic, but to motivate the interest of your audience, we have to realize that these factories are putting out these semiconductor chips, which are ubiquitous in our modern lives. And at this point, semiconductors are so basic to everything that we do as humanity that it's almost taking at the level of basic services like water and electricity, to the point that the US government identified semiconductor supply chain security as a homeland security threat, as in it affects everything that underpins modern civilization. These are the factories which are churning out these bits of semiconductor power circuits, which are powering all of what we do as humanity, from our washing machines to our smartphones to our cloud. And pretty much every revolution, technology revolution that we are talking about, is underpinned by this $600 billion semiconductor industry. And it's the manufacturing of these semiconductors is the part that we are focusing on. And we are bringing the AI revolution to this industry. Some of the specific use cases that we would like to talk about is the semiconductor manufacturing process. I'll use an analogy, which is a very busy airport with lots of flights landing and taking off. And you can see that there are shared resources, which is the runway. You cannot override. You can see that there are mission critical timing constraints involved. And you can see that if there are hundreds or even thousands of planes that have to be distributed across hundreds of runways, that starts to motivate the complexity of managing the wafer flow, the production flow in one of these semiconductor manufacturing factories. And one of the use cases that we have had tremendous success is in applying the technique of reinforcement learning to scheduling the movement of the raw material, which is the wafers, through the factories so that a finished product can come out at the other end. The other point is that these products are so complex. Each individual product is hundreds of layers deep. And each layer requires a dozen or so steps. And each of those steps is, of course, the very familiar kind of photography development techniques, where you put a layer, you expose it with some kind of light that changes the chemistry in some parts of it, and then you etch it and you dry it and you got a photo. This step you have to repeat for every layer. And there are hundreds of layers. And that's just for one kind of semiconductor part. At any given time in these modern factories, you could have 20, 30, 40, or even hundreds of such parts, each of which has their own recipe of manufacturing flowing through this complex flow. This is simply too complex and too high-dimensional an optimization problem for kind of the human brain or even classical algorithms to deal with. So we have taken reinforcement learning, which your listeners might be familiar to, is the same kind of algorithm which was used to win the chess playing and the Go playing machines. Reinforcement learning is the same kind of algorithm which DeepMind is very famous for and has used it very effectively in things like AlphaGo and AlphaFold, which is the protein folding. So DeepMind pioneered the kind of commercialization application of reinforcement learning. And we are one of the few outfits in the world outside of DeepMind that has successfully commercialized the applications of deep learning to the control and the organization and the optimization day by day, hour by hour, minute by minute, optimization of the semiconductor manufacturing plants so that we can dramatically increase their productivity, reduce their waste, reduce the manufacturing cycle time of these critical and very important semiconductor components.
It's interesting to see the DNA. So your background in semiconductor help you appreciate the manufacturing processes and the complexity. And then, as you say, your curiosity led you to AI and particularly adopting this deep minds, if you will, approach to the manufacturing process. So it all makes sense how you got together. If that alone was the value proposition, it would be interesting, but maybe not 100% compelling. What I think you guys have done that makes it really compelling is, as you guys describe it, you're using AI to optimize some of the most important industries on the planet and doing so with zero downtime and zero disruption in established workflows. For our listeners, what is it that you consider to be this zero downtime value proposition, and how does that show up in practice?
Indeed. This zero downtime phrase is bandied about willy-nilly in many industries. But what we have to understand is that for this kind of semiconductor factories, zero downtime is very, very real. I almost like to think of the fab as an organism which has a birth, has a lifetime, and has a death. And just like biological organisms like us, we live out our 80, 100-year lifespans, and we don't shut down. You know, there is no downtime. Downtime means your heart stops, your brain goes, and you're dead. So the semiconductor fab has a lifetime. And another very analogy to the human body or a biological organism is that while the entire entity never shuts down and keeps going, you know, the heart keeps beating from birth to death. In that sense, the semiconductor fab operates nonstop, 24/7, continuously from birth to death. And the lifetime of a fab could be, you know, 10 years, could be 20, 30 years. And in those 10 years, the individual components of the fabs are all changed. The machines are upgraded, the walls are repainted, maybe the building is also redone. But the fab never stops producing. In fact, a fab shutdown is a globally significant event. One of the examples I like to give is Samsung. One of the Samsung NAND factories was in the news because the fab shut down for 30 minutes because of some catastrophic problems. And that impacted 3% of the global NAND production in the world, right? 30-minute shutdown has that kind of, and these NANDs go into memory, go into your smartphones, go into your cloud, go everywhere. So a fab shutting down makes global headlines. That's how rare these events are. These fabs, they never shut down. They have to have zero downtime. They are always producing. Now, of course, the capacity goes up and down. At some point, it's producing way more. Sometimes parts of the fab have been shut down, but it's producing less. So this is the very demanding environment that we are going into, where zero downtime is real. This thing never shuts down. It has to keep going. So in such an environment, right, how do you introduce novel and breakthrough technologies, right? And that's why I like the theme of this podcast, the way we titled it, is augmentation without disruption. Because indeed, and the answer is quite simple if you look at it that way, that we train these intelligent agents, which are trained on hundreds and millions of hours of simulated fab time, and the agent learns to do the right thing to respond to keep the factory production on track. And these agents we deploy next to the human operators that are currently running the fabs and who are sitting in this kind of cockpit. Again, you know, the air terminal, the airline control pilot, and the control tower analogy, that they've got these masses of screens which are displaying all kinds of extremely complex information about the innards of the fab that is working. And there are these fab operators with decades of experience who are sitting there and making sure that nothing goes off. And if anything goes wrong, they jump on it. So one of our agent we introduce to be sitting next to this fab operator and, you know, so to speak, tapping the fab operator on the shoulder, saying, hey, I can see that you're doing this. But by the way, you know, if you try this other thing, then maybe your fab will work better. So we do not touch the existing flow that the customer has. That remains intact. We add a parallel flow where we are constantly retraining these neural networks and pushing out these intelligent agents. And the intelligent agents are really augmenting the human operators. They give suggestions to the human operators that this is what you can do. And that is how you ease in these kind of intelligent agents into the manufacturing environment with zero disruption. Does that make sense?
It does. In fact, it kind of leads to my next question. That really is, how do you know when an organization, a client, is ready to adopt your solution? And what have you seen as some of the best practices for them realizing the full potential value of Mind's AI in implementation?
Yeah. You know, Ken, it's largely a hearts and minds problem, right? Our experience, when we started this journey, I was more focused on kind of, you know, there is some basic level of digitization that the fab has to have, which is, of course, is a must-have. And by basic level of digitization, I mean it has to have sensors which are hooked into an MES. You know, an average state-of-the-art MES is good enough, manufacturing execution system. And the material handling stuff has to be automated, et cetera, et cetera. That basic level of digitization we need. And then we can bolt in our intelligent agents kind of to sit on top of the MES, right? That's as far as kind of the technological readiness goes. And I used to focus on that. But what this journey has quickly taught me that it's about hearts and minds, as in the cultures. These fabs are very interesting environments because, A, it's the culture and the work environment in the fab is very much a product of the location of the fab. So these fabs, you know, the fab in Germany will be run, even though maybe owned by the same overall global enterprise, but the fab in Germany will be very different from the fab in Taiwan, the very language they speak, the software tools they use, the culture of running the fab, everything is different. As I said, the fab has kind of a life cycle of its own. It has a culture of its own. It has the working conditions of its own. And changing the hearts and minds of the fab from the fab operators all the way to the general manager of the fab has been the challenge. But we can see that the wind is turning from a headwind into a tailwind, because now the AI hype in that sense is really helping our cause, because we are seeing, like, from the C-suite, we can see the orders go down, that you have to explore and take some risks and explore how AI can improve the way we run our fabs, increase our productivity, reduce our downtime, increase cycle time, which are literally hundreds of millions of dollars in value per year, per fab. So it's a traditional conservative industry which does not like to take risks, because a risk means something breaks, fab goes down, that's hundreds of millions in impact. So changing the hearts of minds to let them to have these operators trust an AI agent and to demonstrate the value in a non-disruptive way. And it's a thought leadership and it's a changing of guard. We are really revolutionizing the way semiconductor manufacturing is done today. And the technology is ready, and we have thoroughly demonstrated the value of these in high volume production environments. Now it's a matter of changing the cultures so that these fab operators can take the risk of trusting the latest and greatest in language models, in predictive. So we are applying the gamut of reinforcement learning for this industry, all the way from supervised learning, which is to predict, for example, processing time or remaining useful time of a $100 million or $200 million piece of equipment. As I mentioned, we are using reinforcement learning to do the scheduling and the movement of wafers through a fab. We are applying generative AI to predict the behavior of this said $200 million tool 2 days, 2 weeks out into the future, so that we can do kind of preventative maintenance, etc. We are also looking into using language models to help fab operators interpret and understand the state of the fab. So use a language model which is tuned, fine-tuned, to be an expert in all things semiconductor fabrication plant, which is available at the snap of a finger to the fab operators if it wants to query state-of-the-art or general knowledge about what to do, how to respond to various crisis scenarios, etc. So supervised learning, reinforcement learning, generative models, both in terms of generating language as well as generating other sorts of time series data, which would be predictive of the output of a tool, for example. We are bringing the whole suite of deep learning techniques to apply to increasing the productivity, reducing the resources, reducing the waste, improving cycle time in these factories.
Excellent. You've done a great job of summarizing all the reasons that we invested behind you, and certainly behind the semiconductor industry in the U.S. under these reshoring waves that are going on. So you know we always like to ask at the end where you find your personal inspiration.
You know, you said the magic word, reshoring. And really, that also ties in with my personal motivation of working in this field. So in a sentence, the last 20, 30 years in the Silicon Valley, we have watched, or maybe even longer, maybe 50 years, we have watched these semiconductor manufacturing fabs start in the Silicon Valley, right? Right here, this is why this is called the Silicon Valley, because the world's first fabs were here. And then the last 50 years has been offshoring, moving these fabs to the Far East, etc., to the point where now a large part of global production is in Taiwan and China and Korea and in the Far East. And now this process of reshoring has happened, triggered by geopolitical concerns, triggered by other concerns. This is also the wave that we are riding, because this reshoring requires
a lot of automation because there is a huge shortage of skilled workers here in the US. So kind of that's our primary growth driver. And it's also my motivation because at the end of the day, right, this ensures the semiconductor security of the semiconductor supply chain is very, very important to global security. And it is driving. It's driving a whole bunch of other revolutions, underpinning a whole bunch of other revolutions. So I really feel that with the work that we are doing now, bringing deep learning to this part of semiconductor manufacturing is something really meaningful and impactful. It's the iceberg. We see the tip of the iceberg, which is these language models and chatbots and stuff like this that we see in the mainstream media. But there is a huge mass of this iceberg, 90% of it, which is below the water. And that's where we are working in the background, because any efficiencies that accrue from the manufacturing of semiconductors, that really trickles out to every aspect of the technology revolution. And that's what really motivates me, gets me going each day these days.
And for those in the audience, if you want to understand more about the importance of semiconductor, I read a book earlier this year called Chip War by, I think it was Chris Miller. And I tell you, a worthwhile read if you want to understand the geopolitics of IP around chips and the future of the supply chains that are there. So another good reason that we invested in Minds AI. So Sumeet, thank you for sharing this time and insights with us today.
Thanks, Ken. It's been a real pleasure.
It has. It's been a great conversation. I really appreciate you taking the time. So this has been Sumeet Sanyal, co-founder and CEO of Minds.ai. Thank you for listening, and please join us for the next episode of our Digital Thread podcast series. We wish you a momentous day. You've been listening to the Momenta Digital Thread podcast series. We hope you've enjoyed the discussion, and as always, we welcome your comments and suggestions. Please check our website at momenta.one for archived versions of podcasts, as well as resources to help with your digital industry journey. Thank you for listening.